This week on Real Encounters with God, we follow the story of Joshua and the battleground of aggression.
Welcome to Real Encounters with God. Today, the battleground is moving from status quo to courage, and that means that we move. I'm camping right now, pretty similar to an ancient hero in the nation of Israel, a person by the name of Joshua. He camped with all of his countrymen for 40 years. 40 years they were camping in status quo land, and they needed courage to get to a new place. Today, you're gonna learn how to get to a new place, a promised land. And you're gonna do it. You're gonna move from status quo to courage. That's what's going on today.
Joshua was born a slave in Egypt and died the beloved leader of the nation of Israel. He crossed the Red Sea and found freedom, was right-hand man to Moses, and lived 40 years in the wilderness. Then, at age 80, in the mid-1200s BC or around the time of the Trojan War, God chose him to lead the nation into the Promised Land. Joshua was a spy, a leader, a general, and a father who also wrestled with his fear and inspired his people to faithfulness.
The Jordan River.
This is the very second thing, so this is into the historical mode. You give cereal some superlatives.
Well, we're back with cereal. Top guide in the Eastern Hemisphere. Steps on ants with his bare toes and butters his own toast. Where are we today?
Hello, Brian. Today we're at the Jordan River. We are just a few miles north to the Dead Sea, and we're dealing with the spot, with the general location where the Israelites were crossing that river, entering into the Promised Land, the same location where John the Baptist actually used to call the people to come, to repent, to be baptized, and Jesus himself also came here to John.
So we've got major crossings here, we've got a major boundary here, major events with John the Baptist, and I've heard it called the mighty Jordan River. It doesn't look very mighty to me. It looks like a mud puddle. What's the big deal?
That's the truth, yeah. For the last, many years, both Israel, Jordan, Syria, everyone is pumping water that's supposed to reach that river eventually, and the river is dry. But we understand, we know even today, during some of the winters when it has a lot of rain, the water goes up and it's becoming wider and deeper.
Now, coming over this river, the first group that came over that river was the 12 spies who were spying out this promised land.
Yeah, originally when the Israelites are leaving Egypt, we have those 12 spies, including Joshua and Caleb, that are coming and touring this region, searching and checking, who are the enemies, how can we enter, and so on. And unfortunately, from the 12, I would say, special forces unit that were here, only two had the faith to say to the rest, yeah, we can do that. Even though it looks dangerous, we can come, we can enter, and God will give us this place.
And one of those spies is our main character, Joshua.
Right. Joshua showed a lot of faith. Again, he wasn't a young man when he was sent with the 12. He was chosen, imagine, from a nation of over 1 million people, probably, they chose 12. It shows that they had a lot of abilities, they could walk, they could tour, they could hide, they were strong, but only two had faith.
Now, it was a battleground back then. It's still a battleground today. You've got these signs all over the place, like, be careful where you walk around here. And as we come into this area, we can just see all kind of shrapnel of the conflict that's taking place still today right around Jericho.
Yeah, the Jordan River is the border. It's the border between the Kingdom of Jordan and the State of Israel. That's why we have here soldiers, we have here snipers, we have here minefields all over. It used to be a battlefield back then. Of course, Jericho, which is the first city that fell under the Israelites, and from here, they would climb all the way inside west, taking one city after the other. And this is the Judean desert, the famous desert that people had to cross, including Jesus and his disciples. Whenever they would go to Jerusalem from this side, they would cross Jericho, cross the Judean desert, and eventually reach Jerusalem and the temple.
So just some recap, we've got a big mountain over here, Mount Nebo, which is where Moses dies. He dies. 12 spies have come across the water. Now they're all ready, the whole nation of Israel, ready to come across this water under the leadership of Joshua and come into this land, and they are going to be in the midst of battles for quite some time here. It's hard to find a better spot of where this would have taken place than right here.
Yeah, it's a whole new battle. Imagine the first generation that was the desert generation, they all died. They had no faith in God. They said, okay, you will stay in the desert and die. Now it's a new battle. It's a new nation in a sense, people that grew up, and now they have to show their faith when they're entering in order to take the promised land.
Well, I want to cross that Jordan River. It's been a life goal of mine, but it's also a goal of mine to not get shot. So is there a way that I can cross the river and not make an international incident and die?
Well, we'll try to find one. I will show you in a moment. Let's go and see. Okay.
The nation of Israel is camped on the border of the Jordan River. That Jordan River. This is a pretty ominous time in their history. This is going to be their first battle. Remember, they've been wandering around in the wilderness for 40-ish years, waiting for everybody who is unfaithful to just die off. And now this whole nation is like, oh my goodness, this is the eve of go time. This is the time to go and be strong and courageous. In fact, in Joshua chapter 1 and 2, it says that over and over again. Be strong and be courageous. Joshua is an old man right now. Caleb, one of the other spies, is an old man. Other people are all different age ranges, and now, no matter how old they are, they have to get ready for something they've never done before. Go as a unit, go as a team, over the Jordan River. That's why you need strength and courage. You don't need strength and courage for something you've done all the time. Oh, help me, honey. I need strength and courage to brush my teeth. I just don't know what's gonna happen with that molar. Woo! Hey, I need strength and courage. I gotta bend over and feed the dog. I don't know how it's gonna turn out. And he said, woo. No, things that you, hey, look out. I gotta go sit in my cube today. I need some strength and courage for that. Woo! No, and we don't need strength and courage for anything that's a normal thing. You need strength and courage for things that you don't normally do. We need it for things that we haven't moved on before. They have a lot of battles to undertake here. There's 30-ish kings that are over there that they've got to go and take on with little kingdoms. It's going to be one thing after another. It's not just crossing the Jordan. It's thing after thing after thing. The battlegrounds that you're going to face, they're probably not going to be a one-time boom, it's over. There's going to be a one-time boom, significant moment where you move, but then it's going to be battle after battle after battle. Movement always comes when there is obstacles. Obstacles require movement to go over them. This Jordan is a barrier. It's a physical barrier, and it's a psychological barrier. They've never been there before. It's an internal barrier. You have a barrier? Is there some place in your life that you've not moved? Is there something you need to do that you have not done? Is there some place that you need to go that you haven't gone? Is there something you need to ask that you haven't asked? Is there something you need to say that you haven't said? There's something that God probably wants you to do. You may have explained it away, but it's time to move. Joshua knows that he and the entire nation is supposed to get moving, and it's time to stop waiting. A few decades ago, there was an earthquake that actually stopped the flow of the Jordan River. You might say, earthquakes? Really? Well, yeah, that's part of why there are so many archaeological digs. It's because things come down in earthquakes, and they just take the dirt, and they tamp over the villages, and they rebuild on top of it. Sometimes when they unearth some of these walls, they'll see cracks, how the whole wall has shifted because there's been an earthquake. Earthquakes have happened over here. And this one specific earthquake decades ago, it took place upstream in the Jordan, and it actually is said to have stopped the flow of Jordan for a period of time. I wonder, this is all interjection. I'm not sure. This is just a theory. It's very possible that the way the nation of Israel got over the Jordan River, what says on dry ground, was because God caused an earthquake that happened upstream of the Jordan and stopped up the water. God was doing something before they started to move. That's always the key to effectiveness and spiritual success. When you recognize that God is already doing something, all you have to do is you got to go. You have to start moving. They start moving, and all of a sudden the waters stop, and they start moving to a new place, their promised land. I want you to get to your promised land. There's going to be battles there. There's going to be challenges there, but I want you to get there. There's a new place that God wants you to get there. I want you to move and experience something on life that you can't experience where you are right now. You might be with a whole nation of losers who are doing the same things over and over and over and over and over and over and just trying to justify their immobility, but they're not going anywhere. You got to move. You got to model yourself after people like Joshua who have strength and courage. I've undergone innumerable Jordan rivers in my life where there's been something that was unusual and difficult for me to do physically and or psychologically, and I knew I had to press through on it. Just recently, I came up on another one, a very defining one, where I had to cross a Jordan on some things that were very, very uncomfortable for me. So this has spiritual and physical significance for me right now. And I don't know where, but I'm getting over this thing because I'm in a Jordan right now and I need to physically mark that I'm in a new place.
Action.
All right, I found a place. I'm really excited about this because I've never known anyone personally who has physically gone across the Jordan River. As far as I know, anybody I know, I'm the first. So I'm pretty excited about this. Here we go. Here we go. Recent Jordan River crossing. So the last time I was at this spot, I was wrestling with a major, I don't know if I would call it a career decision, a leadership decision, a church decision. It was around how Crossroads has become a national movement. People from all over the nation are part of our church right now and in major metropolitan areas. But I found myself in this real place of, wow, this is actually working, and what does that mean? I thought that Crossroads is just gonna be a Cincinnati thing, or maybe an Ohio thing, or maybe a Cincinnati and Lexington thing, kind of Kentucky, Ohio thing, and now it's much, much more. And I really was sensing God moving me, to think of Crossroads as a national church. And the thought of that was a bit ominous, but was really scary about it was, that means I've got to move. That means something has to be different. Came home, told Lib about this, wrestled with it with her, and some other people who I work really closely with, obviously we'd all been in this and said, yeah, that's where we're going. And I gotta tell you, as ominous and as scary as it was here to make that decision and to talk with people beforehand, during, and afterwards, as ominous and as scary as that was, the joy on the other side is significant. The confidence that I know I'm doing what God wants. The feeling that I'm on a journey. I'm still on a journey. The older I get, I'm still on a journey. The feeling of the adventure wasn't before, and now God's having me just manage things. I'm on an adventure now. We're always on an adventure. Joshua, Caleb, these guys were in their 80s, always on an adventure. I don't know what your Jordan River is. Move, move. You'll like it on the other side. God's over there. Adventure's over there. Movement is there. So I've gone from beautiful Jordan River in Israel to beautiful sort of Cincinnati, specifically Oakley in Cincinnati, Crossroads Oakley. Why here? I'm gonna tell you why in just a moment, but there's some things that happen here that parallel spiritually what took place over in Israel. The nation of Israel, under the leadership of Joshua, they cross over this barrier in their first battle, is against the people who live in the city of Jericho. Jericho is this massive, massive city, massive walls, massive size of people in the city. And whenever you go to do something you've never done before, like cross the Jordan River, or like go up against a battle that you've never had before, you gotta get ready to do some unusual things. And God says, the way we're gonna start this out is, you're gonna march around it 7 times, and you're just gonna be silent. Just go around it. Like, wait a minute, you mean like we're gonna show people what we look like in view of them and just walk around? Yeah, I want you to do that. And then God says, at the end of that, we're gonna have the priests get trumpets, and you're gonna blast those trumpets. Like, go out on the 7th day, just blast trumpets. So like, we're gonna forecast, now is the time, we're coming after you. Okay, I mean, this is odd things that are happening here. I'm gonna tell you something, you gotta be up for doing the odd thing if you want to take new territory. They follow these unusual instructions, and the walls come down miraculously and mysteriously. The walls come down, and they rush in, and they win the battle, and God gets glory, you know? We're here because something unconventional happened here 15 years ago. Where walls went down, where a battle was won, and it's best to be told in the context of the team and the community who experienced it. So I'm here with some old-time people in my life. Marcus, Molly, Lena, all of them have been in my life for a long, long, long time. These folks and about 2 dozen more or so were here at this property in the year 2000. Crossroads had been going for 4 years almost. We had outgrown our rent facilities, and we found this place on the other side of the train tracks. There was a massive warehouse for lumber called HQ that was going out of business. We thought, man, that would be great. That could actually work. And so before I and a couple others were to go to New York for an auction to bid on this property and every other HQ or Hechinger or Builder Square in the country, we called together some trusted people, about 20 or 30 of us, and we started praying. Yes, praying. What do you guys remember about that night?
And it felt like all of our eggs were in God's basket on this one. Like, we didn't have another option. We really wanted to push forward, and we knew like breakthrough would come from God.
So we were holding hands. I remember that we were holding hands. You tugged my hand. We're all in a circle out in the parking lot. And you said, Dad, why don't we march around the building 7 times like they did at Jericho? I was like, that's a good idea.
And so you got this strange group of people standing in a parking lot holding hands like something significant's going on. And then we decide, oh, we're going to even make more of a spectacle of ourselves. We're going to march around the building. I mean, that's crazy, right? I mean, like,
what are those people doing?
People asked. People came out after round two or three going, you guys okay? You need something? Because we kept going by.
Third time around, I'm going, whew, okay. Three times, that's good. Points made. And then I sense God say, you want me to give you a miracle. Specifically, the miracle is praying that you would blind and confuse our enemies, because that's what happened to the inhabitants of Jericho. God blinded and confused them. That's how they were able to beat a superior force, right? And I sense God say, you want me to do a miracle for you, and yet you can't walk? You can't walk seven times around a building? So, okay, let's keep going. So we did that. We did it seven times. And so the next day we had the auction, and we had $4.6 million to work with money we had in hand and a bank that's willing to give us a loan for something. And we got up and we had everyone praying, and it was on Wall Street, and what do you know? We got it for exactly $4.6 million. Come home, I haven't even landed and got word that somebody had offered us double of what we had already bid on the property because they had missed their flight. Somebody else was supposed to be there, another huge, massive corporation, and one person thought the other was going, and the other person thought the other was going, and so they were confused, and so they couldn't go. We ended up getting multiple offers, 2 to 3 times X, what we got this building for, because God literally blinded and confused our enemies. That, friends, that's a miracle. That's a miracle. God still brings down walls today. So let's hear a story from someone in our community who's aggressively making a bold move to bring down walls.
We are in a neighborhood. We're in an urban neighborhood, a changing neighborhood. And this week, we're talking about being aggressive. RH, you are a man who has made an aggressive move toward racial reconciliation.
Exactly.
And that had something to do with your childhood.
In the beginning, it was like everybody was family. I watched it change over the years, and it became drug infested.
What did you learn about race as a child?
A lot of us was raised by racist people. I was raised to not trust the white man. I had an ugly view of white people.
One of the people that changed your view of white people was a friend you made when you were around 12 years old.
It was a friend named Jesse. He was about to get jumped one day because he was white. Something inside of me, I couldn't watch it. I couldn't walk away from it. So I prevented it. I used to walk Jesse home from school. Jesse stayed on the part where it was all white. I stayed on the part where it was all black. Me and Jesse got to know each other. We did this continuously until we became friends.
So let's fast forward to Walnut Hills. You're in your neighborhood. There's another friendship that you made that kind of was a little bit of crossing that line.
Yeah. And that friendship is with Mark Lehman. Me and Mark were neighbors. Mark was white. He stayed in the house behind my apartment complex. I used to always communicate with Mark over the fence. One day I hopped the fence, you know, sat on Mark's porch, talked to him and this and that, and we just had fun just talking. Mark said, hey, Orange, I spoke to a guy. And he just threw his hands up. What is that? I said, Mark, they are feeling like you are part of a hostile takeover. They feel like they're being replaced by newcomers.
Gentrification of a neighborhood.
Yeah.
Happens in a lot of neighborhoods. It's happening around the country.
Yeah.
And it happened here in your neighborhood.
Right.
But I think your response to it was an aggressive move toward love.
Right.
And toward humility. Talk about why that was a big challenge for you to even have a neighborhood with white folks moving in.
I walk down the street and new people will be looking at me like I don't belong here. Mm-hmm. But some of these trees got my name carved in them. Mm-hmm. I read a passage in the Bible that said, when I was a child, I played with childish things. When I became a man, I put those things away. You start thinking like a man, you learn to forgive people. You start thinking, how can I give love? If you want people to love you, you can't wait on people to make the first move.
Yeah.
You got the ideal.
Yeah.
You do it. And that's how the Green Man Twist came about.
Well, I'm at a classic tourist site, which is where the prophet Samuel is supposedly buried right beneath me. There's a lot of history here. Let's go back to the nation of Israel. When they're on the other side of the Jordan River, they send spies over the Jordan River to scout the land. And what they hear and find is that there's giants. And these spies go back and they tell the nation of Israel, oh, look out, there's massive giants. Oh, oogly boogly, we're not gonna be able to win. They end up wandering around for 40 years because of their lack of faith. And when they finally cross the river, in the battles we're going to talk about in a moment, we find that the supposed giants are never an issue. We don't really hear about them creating any problem at all. They either overhype the problem or God helps them overcome it. I wonder how many of us have battles that we could fight, things that we should be doing, but our fears are keeping us immobile. We have an amazing view virtually of the entire nation of Israel today on this clear day. We have in the southeast here, the old city of Jerusalem. We see three towers there. The tallest tower on the right is where the Mount of Olives are. Garden of Gethsemane, that's where Jesus was arrested right before he was tried and crucified. As we come down this way, we can see the north part of the nation of Israel. And off to the west, we have the Mediterranean Sea. As Joshua crosses the Jordan River, they have a victory. Their first victory is Jericho, the Battle of Jericho. It's a classic story, it's a great story. I've wanted to go there and see the ruins, but there are no ruins at the nation of Jericho, no ruins at the city of Jericho. The old ruins are gone, just the new city is there. And I must say, it's not a very good city. It's kind of a skanky city. I have no desire to be there. You shouldn't either. By the way, if you're from Jericho, sorry, no offense intended, but I don't like your city. Nonetheless, they're now coming over through Jericho and they're starting to have victories. They're starting to amass conquering foe after conquering foe. And we have another city here, Gibeon. It's this little mound as I walk into it on the left. And Gibeon, they hear that the nation of Israel is on the move and they're having victories. They're having battles won. And so the king of Gibeon decides to get all of the folks inside of nasty garments. They put their old shoes on. They have old dried out wineskins. They take their bread that basically has maggots on them. And they make themselves look like tired marauders. And they wander up to the nation of Israel. Joshua sees them and they say, hey, we're just some lonely people who are wandering around. Hey, could we make a treaty with you? Joshua makes a treaty with them. And then he realizes he's been tricked. These are people that he should be conquering versus having a treaty with. Joshua is a man of his word. So he says, okay, I'm going to uphold my bargain and I'm not going to attack you. Now, five other kings right in this area hear that the nation of Gibeon has a treaty and they are not happy because now their ally is now an ally with somebody else. And they say, hey, we got to make an example of this guy. We got to eliminate this country, these Gibeonites, to make everyone understand, no, we stick together and we come against the nation of Israel. So now there is going to be a war between all of these kings and Joshua and the nation of Israel. Specifically in the book of Joshua chapter 10, verse 6, it says this. And the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp in Gilgal saying, do not relax your hand from your servants. Come up to us quickly and save us and help us. For all the kings of the Amorites who dwell in the hill country are gathered against us. So Joshua gets this word, and they've got to go on the move. They've got to move from down in the valley here on the east. They've got to move 20 miles and 3,000 feet of elevation. Also remember here is they're moving at night. They've got to move quickly to get to the battle, and they don't have high-tech gear. There's no such thing as dry fit. There's not nice nylon packs. They're hauling leather. They're in sandals. Their weapons are wood and iron. And these manly men get up and they make it to where they need to be. Now in the book of Joshua, chapter 10, verse 12 and following, we see how this battle goes. Look what happens. At that time, Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord gave the Amorites over to the sons of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, "Sun, stand still at Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Aijalon." And the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, until the nation took vengeance on their enemies. There has been no day like it before or since when the Lord heeded the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. They're at a massive disadvantage. They're in foreign land. They've been marching all night. They're tired. And Joshua says a prayer. Specifically, he says a public prayer. He says it in front of the entire nation of Israel. You know, I hear people talk about, well, my faith is a private thing. I have a private spirituality. I hear that and I'm like, man, you're missing a lot of power. If your spirituality or your prayer life is only private, you're not putting yourself out there. By him praying publicly, he invites God's power. Godly aggression invites God's power. And one of the ways that we do that is by praying something publicly. Some of the most vulnerable times of my life when I felt the most naked is when I prayed something publicly. Because when I prayed it publicly, then people knew what I was asking for. And if it didn't happen, I would feel odd. I would feel awkward. But if you want to have power, you've got to go public. Not just with the things that you believe, but also with the things you pray. When Joshua prays this publicly in front of the entire nation of Israel, God starts to move. The X factor comes in. As he's coming up from the east, what happens in the east in the morning? What happens? The sun comes up in the east. The Bible also says the sun and the moon are in the sky. When is the sun and the moon in the sky? It's in the sky in the morning. How many of us have ever been driving to work in the morning and we've been driving into the sun and we're like, I can't see. Everything that we can do to pull down the visor, put on our sunglasses, and still there's a level of energy that's expended to try to focus on the road and go slower. It just really messed us up. And this was with all of our modern technology. It's no different than in the ancient world. As they would come into this valley to meet, God stops the sun in the morning while the moon is still in the sky. And the Amorites, who the nation of Israel is going against, they can't see. They're having all energy to kind of shield their eyes. With one eye, use a sword with the other eye. God answers his aggressive prayer. And then on top of that, God sends hail. Hail is coming down on people. Sun is in their eyes. And God carries the day. And God gets the glory. It's because a nation decided to move, decided to be aggressive. And a nation chooses to pray aggressively. I tell you what, some of the most aggressive and intense things I've ever seen in my life is when I've been willing to move and pray something publicly that sounds really awkward and stupid, and yet when it happens, God gets the glory. That's what he wants for your life. He wants you to make moves, and he wants him to get glory, and for that to happen, you've got to be willing to invite him in and be public about your trust in him. Now let's go and hear the conclusion of someone in our community who went through that exact same process.
RH, you are a man who has made a pretty aggressive move in your life, and it actually has something to do with this ice cream truck.
Green Man Twist.
So tell us that story.
I talked to Mark. I said, "Mark, we got to find a way to fix this." Mark said, "Well, how do we fix it?" So I said, "Ice cream, a place where people can mingle, and Luther Vandross.
Solve all the world's troubles." I like that.
Yeah.
You're even more aggressive than just creating the space, having the music, and having ice cream. Talk about what you do to intentionally connect people at these tables.
While the people are eating ice cream, right, I'll come in between them and I'll start a conversation and get them to talking, and I'll just fade out and stand back and watch the Lord at work. I feel that ice cream and music, good music, would take the gangster out of gangsters. You would never know how great a person is until you really get to know them. It's a good way to get people to love each other, to get to know each other.
Yeah.
Sit down, talk, mingle.
I'm struck by your story that the Jesus move is always the aggressive move. It's always the aggressive move to invest in other people. I just see that all through your story that you've been aggressive. You've been aggressive. What do you think about that?
If you really, really want something, you have to be aggressive. It's aggressiveness that get people undivided attention. I don't want to sit here and tell you that I love you and don't show that I love you.
And you said for you even, there was a maturity that had to happen. You had to admit that you had a wrong view of white people.
Exactly.
Right.
And if you think that you can receive love by standing there waiting on that man to give you love, you're dead wrong. You have to be aggressive.
You have to be aggressive. So you chose to be aggressive and say, hey, I have wrong thinking.
Right.
And I've got to mature my thinking.
Right.
You chose to be aggressive and say, I don't just want to see it happen in the neighborhood, hope it happens in the neighborhood, but I want to make it happen in the neighborhood.
Make it happen. I want people to build me for me. Don't build me for what you see around me or where I live or my color. I want to be treated good. I know the next man want to be treated good.
What would you like to see happen because of Green Man Twist?
I would like to walk down the streets of Walnut Hills and see white people and black people speaking to each other, knowing each other on first name basis, inviting each other to each other's homes.
Loving our neighbors.
Loving our neighbors. That's it in the whole nutshell. Remember earlier in the story we talked about Jesse? Mm-hmm. It would be no more Jesse's neighborhood or RH's neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. No more all white or all black.
That's right. Yeah. They probably had to change the name to Heaven.
Welcome to Heaven, man. That's a God-sized vision.
Yeah.
And he has put that faith in you. And I just want to thank you for being aggressive for that vision. I think a lot of us are inspired by your story to figure out what that looks like for us. Where is God calling us to be aggressive?
Right, exactly.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Searching for a place to stand, a thousand different voices shouting empty words, hollow commands. Oh, 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 oh. There's a longing deep inside for a taste that satisfies, not just quenching pangs of hunger, but to feel this passion growing. But in all, hope is what I need. So I'll cling to my last breath, these words. Be strong, take courage. Don't live in fear. And our God's not distant.
Joshua 10:24 says, and they drew near and put their feet on their necks. Then Joshua said to them, do not be afraid, nor be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage, for thus the Lord will do to all your enemies against whom you fight. these five Ammonite kings who were standing in the way of God, they got conquered. And as a good leader who uses visual representation, says, come over here, let's put our feet on top of their necks. And he just pins their head right against the ground. He says, this right here, more of this. More of this. We're going to have more of this, and I want this to motivate you for what's happening here right now will continue to happen in your life. You know, there have been things that have happened in your life up to this point. You can't explain any way that God has been active in your life. There's been things that you've been able to overcome. There's been things that you've been able to endure. There's been things that you've been able to do that many people who want to stay here in the known and don't move can only think about versus experience. That's the beginning for you. There's more for you. There's more. There's kings over there that you're to conquer. There's places you're supposed to see. There's a person you're supposed to be, but only when you move. Let me pray for you right now. God, I pray that your grace would be upon everyone who's engaged right now. I pray that your spirit would set us a flame, that you would set us on fire to be about you and your ways. I pray that you would give us the encouragement that is necessary to make our next step, to make our next move to the place where strength and courage resides. Just put your hand on these people, God, as we move. And I pray these things according to the character and identity and movement of Jesus. Amen. Let's move.
On the next episode of Real Encounters with God, we follow the story of King David and the battleground of repentance.